Okay, I'd like to call the Senate State Affairs Committee meeting to order. Let the record reflect that it is 3:32 p.m. We are currently in the Belts Committee room in Juneau, Alaska. Members present, Vice Chair Senator Bjorkman, Senator Wilikowski, Senator Tilton, Senator Gray Jackson will be joining us online. Myself, Chair Kawasaki, we have a quorum to conduct business. I'd like to thank Carrie Tupoa from Senate Records and David Monroe, the moderator with the Legislative Information Office. Today we just have one agenda item, and that's an overview of the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, or AIDA as we know it, to presenting on an update in current projects and an external report. I know that Randy Ruaro is in another meeting, but may be joining us toward the latter half of the meeting unless we get out of here earlier than that. But online to present, we have Jeff Johns, the Chief Investment Officer and main presenter today. Kent Sullivan, General Counsel, I guess maybe just here for legal questions. Mark Davis, Special Counsel for historical and technical questions on specific projects. I would like to thank you for being here today, and you may start your presentation.
Good afternoon, Chair, Vice Chair, and committee members. For the record, my name is Jeffrey Johns. I currently serve as the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority Chief Investment Officer, or AIDA. As highlighted, I'm joined today by AIDA's General Counsel, Kent Sullivan. And for the record, I do have off camera with me Jeffrey San Juan, AIDA's Infrastructure Development Program Manager. Again, thank you for the opportunity to testify and present to you AIDA's projects, the anticipated economic report, and provide AIDA project updates. And finally, I'd also like to address recently AIDA's credit rating received by S&P. I see that you have the AIDA annual report up on screen, and that's a very excellent starting point. AIDA, I think, was without question is understand that AIDA is the state of Alaska's development finance authority. AIDA exists to promote economic development, job creation, and retention solely within the state. AIDA was primarily created by legislature to take on in-state development projects and business finance and lending risk. AIDA operates and finances projects largely, if not entirely, through AIDA's pledged resources, namely its revolving fund, and if necessary, accessing funds that are invested and held with external managers that's subject to AIDA's investment policy standard. AIDA has two primary financing vehicles, its Loan Participation Program, or LPP. The LPP is AIDA's bank partner tool. Banks originate, underwrite, service the loan, and AIDA can participate or purchase up to 90% of a loan to a maximum of $25 million. The LPP then delivers longer terms. It provides patient capital, as does AIDA's other financing programs. Terms range from 15 to 25 years, depending on the nature of the investment. Equipment, 15 years. Real estate, longer term, 25 years. What this does is provide lower scheduled payments for Alaskan businesses and the bank's borrowers. It's important to note that AIDA does not compete or replace banks. The program is structured as a participation that keeps bank underwriting and banks in place, facilitating additional lending by those participating financial institutions, allowing their balance sheet to go even further. AIDA's other primary financing tool is its direct finance program, or what we refer to as the 172 program, which is defined in statute, specifically 4488-172. This direct finance program is AIDA's channel for capital-intensive, revenue-generating infrastructure and long-duration assets that often don't fit within conventional financing. And again, our investments are solely within the state of Alaska in fulfillment of our mission, economic development and job creation. AIDA engages early and then runs a continuum from concept and feasibility through due diligence with increasing rigor, before any board approval or project or financing documentation and execution. The discipline is repayment sources, credit strength, risk assessment, so that projects advance only if they align, as I said, with our mission, statute, and of course, subject to board approval. Other financing tools that we have in our toolbox are conduit revenue bonds. ADA can issue taxable or tax exempt conduit revenue bonds for eligible projects. In this case, ADA only serves as the conduit, which means that ADA's credits and assets are not at risk. We facilitate borrower lending, in this case, through the bonding. We also have two smaller programs that are capitalized with ADA funds, but that are facilitated through the Department of Community Commerce and Economic Development. Those are the Small Business Economic Development Fund, or SBED. SBED is ADA's small business tool to finance startup and expansion that creates significant long-term employment and in eligible ADA communities, or I'm sorry, Alaska communities. Recently, December 2025, through resolution G2512, SBED was recapitalized up to $6 million. $3 million came out of ADA's revolving fund, and $3 million was allocated from the Rural Development Initiative Fund, or RDIF, which I'll get to momentarily, over into SBED. And the reason why this was done is because SBED is the more popular of the two programs administered by investments under DCCED. This recapitalization is expected to finance approximately 25 to 30 loans and create and preserve approximately 120 jobs, as represented by Division Director Andy McCauley. Without this recapitalization, Mr. McCauley had indicated that investments would have to stop accepting applications and suspend lending for a period of up to 9 months. As noted, the other DCCED-run program using ADA funds is the Rural Development Initiative Fund, or RDIF. RDIF targets small, remote Alaskan communities up to 5,000 individuals off-road or maximum 2,000 on-the-road system. This program is job-linked, but is somewhat more constrained than SBED by statutory limits, geography, lower caps, and a higher interest rate, and thus that is why SBED is the more popular of the two programs. Collectively, these programs have in excess of 60 loans outstanding. The total principal of those loans outstanding is about $14.5 million. The average loan size is approximately $225,000, and currently they have a 0% delinquency rate. Transitioning over to ADA's financial contribution, and this is also represented in ADA's annual report. ADA has collectively paid in aggregate in excess of $520 million in dividends to the state commencing in fiscal year 1997. Recently, the ADA board approved a $17 million dividend for fiscal year 25, which is to be paid in fiscal year 27. There is a two-year lag. So this year, for example, ADA paid an $11 million dividend that was declared in fiscal year 2023. These dividends, as defined in statute, are the direct recurring way that ADA converts its investment and project success into State of Alaska's general fund in support of State of Alaska's general fund. As you'll see in the annual report, and I'm sorry, I'm jumping around a bit and I don't have the page numbers, but ADA's fiscal year 2025 net position was approximately $1.5 billion, which was an increase in net position and of approximately $69.5 million. Moving on in the annual report, there's the section that commences with project status and project updates. That is can be found commencing on my goodness, I'll get to it momentarily. page 21 and page 22. I will not follow the exact structure of the annual report, but I will address those projects presented. I'd like to begin with the Ambler Access Project. Ambler is a proposed 211-mile industrial access road from the Dalton Highway into the Ambler Mining District to unlock critical minerals development in northwest Alaska. The purpose of the road is to access multiple mines, deposits over time, plus a broader exploration potential that includes in excess of 1,700 active mine claims in the region and district. The district is widely described as copper dominant, with copper, zinc, lead, cobalt, associated gold, silver. And federal reports indicate that there's also strategic gallium and germanium present. It is forecasted, ADA forecasts through its partners, that the project will create, the road project will create over 3,000 jobs during the four-year construction period, approximately 140 or 141 jobs annually during road operations. The estimated fiscal lifetime payments are in excess of $193 million to the local municipalities and communities, and approximately $1 billion to the state tied to mining enabled by the presence and construction of the road. More recently, in 2025, after approval of ADA's ANILCA 1106 appeal, and related executive direction, federal approvals and permits were reinstated, and ADA's planning on an extensive winter and summer field work program. ADA board has approved up to in excess of $100 million of financing and capital contribution of ADA's own assets, with Ambler Metals reimbursement commitment in excess of $30 million. The West Susitna project is another industrial access road that it is advocating for, much closer to Anchorage, of course.
Mr. Johns, can I
yes, of course.
Just briefly, I did have a couple questions on Ambler. I'm reading off the slide deck, and it's page 24 of the annual report, so I don't know if everybody's on that page right now. First, Ambler's misspelled at the very top. But other than that, I just wanted to ask a couple questions about Ambler in general. The mine, the road itself, has it already been fully permitted?
If I may, would you kindly permit me to defer to my colleague, Mr. San Juan?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Whoever wants to speak.
Thank you.
Through the chair, is that Representative Senator Bjorkman? To answer your question,
Kawasaki.
Yes, on the federal, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. The permits for the road have been permitted. So we have all of our federal permits. That was what the 1106 was granted. So those have been secured, and we are in the process of securing the federal permits as well. So we anticipate having all of our permits for right away completed for federal and state in the near term.
And Mr. San Juan, on the permitting for the road, it's listed here as a 200-mile, or the background says 211-mile industrial road. Is that to be mean that it's only accessed by certain vehicles, or is it, you know, we've heard that it might be accessible to the public, or it might not be. I think I had heard at one point that it was not going to be accessible to the general public.
Yeah, thank you very much for that question, Mr. Chair. And you're correct. It is a private industrial access road only. That is what our permits stated. And it is, we have to keep all of our, all the access private industrial.
And just to clarify, like the Pogo Mine Road, the 40-mile Pogo Mine Road that's up in Delta Junction area, that's also sort of I don't know if it's the same classification or not, but it is a private road as well, but there's some way to get permitted access Will this not be that same type of situation?
Yeah, through the chair, the Ambler project is different from the Pogo Road, because the Pogo Road does have the permit on that one actually has a private, a public portion of it that basically once a certain, once the mine is done, it's acknowledged that it will be transferred over to public. So that is completely different. As when the mine is operating, from my understanding on Pogo, it remains privately controlled, but the permits acknowledge that there is public access, there's existing rights of way, existing trails, activity happening on state land that allows the public to access once that road is completely, the mine's done, and it's no longer needed for private industrial. So it's completely separate from Ambler's proposed permitting, because it's Ambler's completely been permitted with private industrial access only, no public.
And just one more question on Ambler access. If Ambler Metals owns the rights of the road or rights of the right-of-way, and a mine is found along the right-of-way, but it's not by Ambler Metal, will that be accessible somehow? We have similar, I think there's some similar discussions up on the North Slope where you've got sort of Santos and ConocoPhillips. ConocoPhillips owns the road. Santos has a project that's off the road, and they're trying to utilize it. And I'm just curious if this excludes or would exclude other projects from happening from different types of mine operators in the area.
Great question. And the way Ambler was set up was identical to the Long Mountain Transportation System, which is the Red Dog Road and Port. And Red Dog Port contemplated multiple mines being developed and transportation and access for each one of those individual mines. So because Ada owns that road and port, we already have the framework in our documents and operating agreements with Red Dog that allows, which we're modeling for Ambler, which will entail do the same thing for all the potential mines along the corridor. And our permits with the state and federal government allow us to be able to provide access to all the users. So users have to pay to be able to utilize the Ambler Road. So that is different than Santos, where there's basically some confusion of who can do what. But our state and federal permits allow us to be the sole manager of the project and attain revenue sources, be able to enter into agreements with the different mines to allow access along the road.
Great. Thank you, Mr. San Juan. Please continue.
Not a question.
Oh, wait. There is a question by Vice Chair Bjorkman.
Thank you, Chair Kawasaki. Mr. San Juan or anyone else, last year we heard a significant amount about this road, as well as what the NANA Regional Corporation thought of the road. NANA was and had been in support of the project, and now, you know, they were not in support of this road last I heard. Has their position changed? What is the current position of NANA Regional on this road?
Through the chair, Senator Bjorkman, we are started to have conversations again with NANA, and so we are working on trying to get a access agreement to do the winter work. So they have come back and at least are starting to communicate after we received our right-of-way permits. So we are working with NANA, and I think the relationship is starting to get rebuilt. So that's, for the most part, what I can share right now is that we are working on increasing our stakeholder outreach within their community and with the NANA region itself.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Moving on to the other principal industrial access road that Ada is the project proponent for, the West Sioux Sittin Access Project. This particular road is intended to establish dependable managed access into a region of the state land with significant development potential, reducing logistics barriers and increasing investment and development for this part of the state and region. The project remains in early permitting. In July 2025, ADA submitted an individual section 404 permit application and jurisdictional determination to the U.S. To request the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, a key step before any construction decisions. ADA's model is an industrial toll road structure, as Mr. San Juan described, very much like the DeLong Mountain Transport System, the DMTS. So users bear a larger share of long-term construction and maintenance cost rather than the general taxpayers. The ANWR Section 1002 leases, also represented in the annual report. Section 1002 is approximately $1.5 million of million acres in coastal plain area in the ANWR refuge that Congress specifically designated for potential oil and gas development. ADA holds coastal plain federal leases totaling in excess of 300,000 acres, each with an initial term of 10 years that were issued initially after the 2021 BLM lease sale. In January 2025, Executive Order 14153 and the Interior Secretarial Order 3422 initiated steps to restore leasing, permitting, and reinstate the 2020 Record of Decision framework. In March 2025, Judge Sharon Gleason ruled Interior improperly canceled ADA's leases, resulting in the reinstatement of ADA's leases. Recently, ADA signed new lease agreements and remitted just under $11 million related to their reinstatement. This approximately $11 million payment is shared 50% to the state under current law. However, beginning in fiscal year 2034, that payment will shift to 70% state, 30% federal government. ADA has already begun permitting pre-development seismic permitting work with a local company related to, again, its 3D seismic program, which we anticipate that will commence in approximately 1 year's time.
I have a question.
Yes, please.
In 2018, when the original lease sale came out, there were the, 20 or so parcels. ADA picked up a handful of them. And then there were some others that were picked up by private in holders. What happened to the other privately held leases in the 1002 area?
Yes, through the chair, Senator, those two particular leases, when ADA's leases were canceled in approximately June, July of 2020, those two corporations. The simple way is they gave their leases back to the BLM, and I'm assuming they received their bonus bid payments and any other payments that were associated with that. Those two leases are actually important leases that ADA believes has significant resource potential, and I expect that we will receive board approval, if requested, to bid on those two particular leases in a subsequent lease sale, if and when that does happen.
Thank you.
As we've already referenced here, I would like to address the DeLong Mountain Transport System, or DMTS, the approximately 52-mile road and port that ADA financed in support of the Red Dog Mine. Again, as I said, DMTS is the enabling 52-mile road and port system that have made the Red Dog Mine possible, which of course is in the Northwest Arctic Borough. In addition to the haul road and port facilities, it also contains fuel system storage and utilities. local and regional fiscal impact of not only the mine and the road and port system has been significant. The Northwest Arctic Borough has received in excess of $300 million in revenue, including approximately $300 million of PILTER payment in lieu of taxes. And since 2018, the Village Improvement Fund has generated in excess of $50 million. DMTS provides for approximately 500 direct year-round jobs, plus approximately 1,100 direct, indirect, or induced jobs statewide. Total wages exceed $150 million annually, and more than half of local hires are in fact NANA shareholders. There's been in excess of $2 billion in royalty payments over the project life, with approximately $1.8 billion distributed to ADA or Alaska Native corporations through the 7I and 7J payment and revenue sharing program. Tech, Red Dog's operators, and total taxes that have paid to this state are estimated to exceed $1 billion, and sustaining that requires new ore bodies beyond currently permitted reserves, as I'm sure the committee members are aware that the mine life, end of mine life, is anticipated to come to a close here in approximately 2031. However, Teck, of course, is moving forward on the possibility of developing additional reserves in two particular ore bodies that are on state land. The next project I'd like to briefly address is... yes, please.
Do you have a question about the Red Dog? It mentions here about the 1,000 NANA shareholders. Do you have any idea what that... I guess within the mine footprint itself, what the percentage of labor is that's local labor, or at least Alaska in-state hire?
Through the chair, Mr. Chair, I don't particularly have that breakdown, but I can certainly get that for you in a subsequent follow-up, unless my colleagues are aware of that particular statistic. Kent is indicating no, and Mr. San Juan does not have that. So if I may, I will jot that down as an action item.
Okay. And then based on that and based on the economic impacts that are being touted in this particular Red Dog project, can you tell me about Ambler? If Ambler were to have the 500 direct jobs, 495 direct jobs, $72 million in wages, and 3,436 additional indirect or induced jobs within the region, according to the slide, is the ADA board requiring that Ambler Metals or that the producers or that whoever's involved with the project at the end commit to hiring local?
I can answer that through the chair. For the Ambler project, when you see the total amount of economic activity, it's strictly for the road itself. When we talk about the mines, that's where the majority of the jobs actually transpire. And Ambler Metals has a partnership with NANA, and the same arrangement that NANA has with Teck applies to Ambler Metals. So that means that they do have a preferential hiring target for NANA shareholders for the Ambler Mining District. I mean, not the Ambler Mining District, but the Ambler Metals prospect at Arctic and at Bornite. So ADA itself we cannot have a targeted shareholder hire preference as a state agency, but NANA and its partnership and agreement with Ambler Metals is completely separate from our project.
Okay, thank you for that clarification, Mr. San Juan. On the road construction and operations, it also quotes that there's 360 direct jobs for the road construction period, 81 direct jobs annually for road operation and maintenance. Would those be, I mean, is there anything that can commit the hiring of the road maintenance and the road construction to be local hire and Alaskan hires?
I'll ask Kent to give kind of his feedback regarding shareholder hire on that one, but Kent, can you provide the response to that, please?
I can. Good afternoon, members of the committee and Chair Kawasaki. My name is Kent Sullivan, General Counsel for ADA, last name S-U-L-L-I-V-A-N for the record. As Mr. San Juan indicated, the challenge is that as a state entity, to the extent that ADA is letting out any contracts for construction on Ambler Road, ADA itself is prevented from doing any preferential hire for Alaskan Natives. But that being said, to the extent that there are portions of the road that are going across Nana and Doyon land, and to the extent that Nana and Doyon end up holding those contracts to perform that work across their own lands or have entities bid on those, certainly Nana and Doyon have the ability to invoke shareholder preference with regard to workers that are performing that work on their lands. So that can happen on Nana and Doyon land, but as to contracts that ADA would administer, it's not possible to do shareholder hire preference.
Okay, so actually this might be a question for you as general counsel. You know, ADA's role is since 1967 was to make sure to diversify the state economy, provide jobs and sort of employment opportunities within the state of Alaska for Alaskans. And I'm just curious, does that still hold that ADA wants to ensure that that is something that's taken into account when they're making sort of these either loans or conduit revenue bonds or any of those types of things, that is a discussion that sort of overrides the entire discussion?
Mr. Chair, yes, the answer to that question is we absolutely do. It's a big consideration and a big factor when we look at projects, when we look at loans, when we look at applicants, the number of jobs that will be generated, who will hold those jobs, where the company is from and the jobs that they're creating, all of that is a major factor and a major consideration in doing what ADA does. It certainly is, and it's a big part of the conversation.
So with that, it's a part of the conversation, but so you're saying that ADA as a board can't use that as a preference or as a, I don't know, when it's being negotiated, that whatever company does get a loan or a bond or something like that doesn't have, I mean, isn't to the maximum extent under the law sort of being able to, I mean, forced to hire Alaskans first. Is that not something that ADA can do?
So, Mr. Chair, when we have contracts that are sent out for RFP or we're seeking proposals, certainly we have the ability to have Alaska preference, if you will, on many of those contracts. But that's different than shareholder preference with regard to Alaska Native corporations. Alaska preference is something that can be invoked at times under certain circumstances, but shareholder preference is something that cannot. And when I say that jobs are a major consideration, I'm talking about jobs generally, not simply shareholder jobs and not simply Alaska preference or Alaska jobs. We do look at a company and if the project is large enough, roughly what percentage do they look at folks coming from out of state or what percentage of folks would be hired in state. But generally speaking, we're looking at job creation as a whole and the amount of salary and whatnot that would be associated with those jobs, whether they're high-paying jobs, low-paying jobs, that type of thing. But not, we don't generally differentiate between Alaska shareholder hire and Alaska hire.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Sullivan. Senator Bjorkman has a question.
Thank you, Chair Kawasaki. Could you please talk a little bit about how the economics of Red Dog Mine change as the mine site moves from its current location to state land?
And I'll let Jeff answer that if we could.
Yeah, through the chair. The economics that we have with the existing agreement with Red Dog, we entered into a 50-year agreement with Teck. And so that 50-year agreement contemplates a minimum annual assessment for the duration of the agreement, which we entered into 1990. Therefore, we expect to have payments of the minimum annual assessment till 2040. So regardless of what happens at the mine site, Teck will be making a minimum annual payment to ADA. The agreement does have incentives based upon tonnage of the traffic that goes through the port, as well as the commodity prices of zinc escalators. So depending on the price escalator and the tonnage, ADA has been receiving additional revenue based upon those two metrics. But if for some reason they're not able to make an investment decision to expand onto state lands, ADA will continue to receive revenue till 2040.
Thank you for that answer.
Okay, you can continue.
Thank you. Moving on, I'll segue to the Interior Energy Project or the Interior Gas Utility. This particular entity exists to lower long-term energy costs by expanding natural gas LNG supply, storage, and distribution for, broadly speaking, the Fairbanks North Star Borough and North Pole via the IGU. ADA, through enabling legislation, has provided approximately $139 million of sustainable energy transmission and supply, ADA SETS, SETS program. The first North Slope LNG delivery came in October 2025, reducing the demand on Cook Inlet natural gas from South Central. Regular truck deliveries or LNG truck deliveries recently began in December of 2025, and there's averaging approximately 70,000 gallons a day. The IGU now serves approximately 3,600 customers with a distribution system exceeding 230 miles with air quality benefits from reduced PM2.5 particulate matter. Of course, as we're aware that Fairbanks and surrounding area does suffer from that, in particular in the wintertime. Moving to the southeast, and particularly the Ketchikan shipyard, this particular shipyard, of course, is a major ADA-owned maritime industrial facility supporting Alaska Marine Highway System festivals and other state, federal, and commercial maritime work, keeping maintenance jobs and spend it within the state, as opposed to sending it outside, particularly down in the Pacific Northwest. In September 2025, ADA transitioned operatorship to an entity referred to or called JAG Alaska or JAG Marine Group. Operations activity has surged. The workforce has grown from approximately 15 to 150 on site, and there is a strong backlog in over the next 18 to 24 months in terms of projects in the JAG pipeline. Also, ADA and JAG are explicitly building training and career pathways tied to shipyard and maritime trades, as we understand that there is quite a bit of shortfall of marine electricians for the shipyard, given the pipeline of projects and vessel repair and maintenance work that JAG has already secured. Moving much further up into the state, specifically the North Slope, I'd like to address recently closed financing for an entity called Alyeskum. The Alyeskum North Slope plant is a first-of-its-kind public-private financing, as I said, for an industrial plant in approximately 3 to 4 miles west of Dead Horse. It is anticipated to produce approximately 750 barrels a day of methanol and approximately 1,300 to 1,400 barrels a day of ultra-low sulfur diesel. It's important to note that for all intents and purposes that a producer cannot produce a barrel of oil without the presence of methanol up in the North Slope. The plant will substitute long-haul imports, stabilize supply, reduce logistics risk, and support lower emissions operations relative to importing product from methanol, in particular from outside Alaska, and lower input costs to North Slope producers, as methanol is currently imported from Trinidad, Tobago, and Asia. ADA's financing for this particular project is initially a construction loan of up to $70 million. It will convert into a $50 million plus capitalized interest senior secured term loan for 10 years, plus what we've characterized as a $20 million retirement of the loan in lieu of what we've characterized as a royalty, which is a price per gallon for both products produced through the plant up to its nameplate capacity for no less than 50 years. And this particular royalty payment does survive any type of change of control if, for example, ownership changes. As of the end of December of this past year, progress for the construction of the plant remains aligned with the approved baseline schedule. Mechanical completion is forecast for early 2027, with commissioning and testing coming shortly thereafter. So essentially, the project is on schedule and on budget. Another recent ADA financing is related to Cook Inlet natural gas supply, in particular for Hex Cook Inlet or Fury operating Alaska. ADA's recently closed and funded the first draw on a $50 million revolving credit facility that supports drilling and production for financing for Hex Fury operating Alaska, who operates the kitchen lights unit in Cook Inlet. This is obviously aimed at stabilizing and expanding in-state natural gas supply. Hex's publicly reported production share of Cook Inlet gas is currently at 7.5%. Hex management is targeting greater than a 10% share of Cook Inlet natural gas supply with additional drilling, and has cited the potential for any up towards a 15% longer term if development succeeds. And this will be facilitated, these targets will be facilitated through ADA's established revolving line of credit. It's important to note to the jobs question is that upon acquiring the company, Hex focused on transitioning jobs from out-of-state Alaska residents, and they've moved from one Alaskan employee to over 20 within the first year, and they do have an Alaskan hire focus. That is one of the mandates and missions of this particular organization. Another flagship asset that ADA owns is the Ted Stevens Anchorage International Airport, the FedEx MRO facility. This particular facility is a revenue-producing asset for ADA. It generates approximately $1.7 million a year paid to ADA through lease payments occupied by FedEx, and they've been in that particular facility since approximately 1995. This facility supports approximately 50 to 60 skilled aircraft maintenance jobs, keeps specialized aviation work within Alaska, and recently ADA invested approximately $3 million in replacing the roof to protect and preserve the asset. Another ADA-owned asset is the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, the U.S. Coast Guard building on Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson. This is a paid-for-use ADA-owned asset that generates in excess of $1 million a year in payments to ADA, which are fixed through calendar year 2043. When the project was constructed, it was delivered ahead of schedule and under budget. It produced approximately 80 construction jobs and helped retain in excess of 100 acreage-based Coast Guard jobs. I'd like to address a few projects that are not actually represented, and projects and financing that are not represented in the annual report. One is the Blood Bank of Alaska Loan Facility. ADA financed $8.5 million as a part of a $45 million loan to build and expand Alaska's in-state blood testing facility in Anchorage. At the time, construction supported approximately 130 jobs and a total of 230 jobs, both indirect and induced. It's important to note that at ADA, during the COVID-19 pandemic, acted with a guarantee and temporary relief to maintain uninterrupted statewide blood services. Another project that is not represented in the annual report is ADA's financing to Huntotum Corporation and the Icy Strait Point facility not too far from Juneau. ADA financed improvements to what is referred to as a phase two development, which includes a 500-foot floating dock and a welcome center, which strengthened the visitor economy in Huna. This is in fact a unique structure, is because ADA Direct partnered with ADA's loan participation program, establishing a loan facility in excess of $30 million. The destination now sees approximately 240 seasonal cruise ship visits and over 500,000 passengers each year. The project converts tourism into local employment and is the largest employer in Huna, which has a community population of approximately 1,000 individuals. That brings me to the conclusion and update on ADA's projects and ADA's financing. And I'm happy to entertain any particular questions that the committee may have. If not, I would very much like to transition over to the Northern Economics document, the 16-page executive summary that was provided to the committee.
And Jeff and Mr. Chair, if I could, I have just a few points of clarification that I'd like to make about some of our earlier testimony, if I could, please. Yep.
You bet, Mr. Sullivan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One thing I wanted to clarify is, while certainly it's true that the Ambler Access Project is going to be a private industrial road, it's important to that the committee understand why that is. With regard to the Ambler Access Project, because that's a 211-mile road, it covers a very broad geographic area. And as the committee is aware, it crosses both Nana land and Doyon land. And one of the big concerns that both Nana and Doyon have is potential impacts to subsistence users and to the native communities along the road. And so one of the requirements for being allowed to potentially have access across Nana and Doyon land is that the road be private. And so there's really no way for the project to move forward and to potentially access Nana and Doyon land without honoring that commitment and that requirement. So that's the reason why the Ambler Access Project requires construction of a private industrial road. On the other hand, I'd like to point out that some of the earlier testimony may have been a little bit unclear as to the West Susitna project. The West Susitna project is differentiated from the Ambler Access Project in that West Susitna is intended to be a public road along both the DOT portion of the road as well as the ADA portion of the road. So it's different than Ambler in that the West Susitna project is intended to be a public road at this point. The other thing I'd like to point out is that Ambler Metals will not be owning the entirety of the Ambler Access Road. I think it was suggested in a question that perhaps that might be the case. Instead, the plan at this point is that all stakeholders along the road, including the mining companies that will use it, not just Ambler Metals, but other mining companies, as well as Nana and Doyon, will have likely an ownership interest in the road, or at least in the legal entity that is formed to hold and manage the road. And so it won't be just one mining company. So I just want to clear that up. And then finally, with regard to preferential hire, as I pointed out earlier, ADA as a state corporation is not allowed to have preferential hire for Alaska Native Corporation shareholders. But on the other hand, we do, when we do RFPs, we do allow a preference to be given. But that preference isn't to companies that invoke Alaska hires. Instead, that preference is to Alaska companies. So Alaska entities that are formed and organized and domiciled in Alaska, that's where the preference goes to on many of our RFPs. So I just want to make that clarification as well. And that's all I have, but happy to answer any follow-up questions that any of you might have on those.
Thank you, Mr. Sullivan. Senator Bjorkman.
Thank you, Chair Kawasaki. Through the chair to Mr. Sullivan. Mr. Sullivan, I heard you mention concerns about wildlife impacts. Wasn't there a study that was released at the end of calendar year 2025 that said the Ambler Road would have minimal impact on caribou herds that it might encounter?
That is correct. Senator Bjorkman, through the chair, that is correct. And I'll have Jeff address that particular study that you're referencing. When I testified just a moment ago, I was speaking to the concerns that Nana and Doyon have raised. They've been particularly concerned about potential impacts to wildlife and to subsistence uses along the road. And so that's where their concerns are. But you're correct that we did release a study just recently that addressed that the road will have minimal impacts to wildlife. But Mr. San Juan, if you want to address that in any more detail, feel free.
Yeah, thank you. Through the chair, Senator Bjorkman, that is correct. ADA did release, October, November, a study from Dr. Matthew Cronin regarding the impact of the Ambler Road to the Western Arctic caribou herd. That was a concern of many of the community members from the Northwest Arctic Borough, as well as in the Doyle region, as far as the potential impact of caribou of our road on the Western Arctic caribou herd. And the findings were that the Western Arctic caribou herd historical migration are north and west of the proposed Ambler Access Project. And so it doesn't mean that the caribou do not sometimes cross the Ambler Road, but it is not in the regular reoccurring fall migration pattern of the Western Arctic caribou herd, which is typically on the western side of the project around the community of Ambler and Shubneck. And so that was one of the key findings, but most importantly, also acknowledges that some of the causes to the decline of the Western caribou herd is without the road currently in existence is due to several complex causes. Some of them that is anticipated is weather events from icing, as well as events related to predation. And so predation seems to be a big cause of the potential decline of the Western Arctic caribou herd, as well as significant weather events that has caused more of the significant declines throughout the different years. And so that was some of the main findings. It also kind of discusses and shows maps related to the DeLong Mountain Transportation System. And with the DeLong Mountain Transportation System, the actual caribou migration, that is a regularly occurring migratory route for the Western Arctic caribou herd. So it does acknowledge that the DeLong Mountain Transportation System is in the heart of a regularly occurring migration pattern, and it's not one of the causes of the decline of the Western Arctic caribou herd. So those are some of the key findings of that report. Can't think of anything else, but it's definitely a good study by Dr. Cronin.
Thank you for that clarification.
Thank you very much. I did have a question. It was on a very, very early slide and had to do with the Rural Development Initiative Fund. And I was just reading a little bit more about what it is, and it's for populations of 5,000 or less, not connected to road or rail to Anchorage or Fairbanks, or a population of 2,000 or less connected by road or rail. So for the public's information, it mentioned that you were recapitalizing the small business economic fund, small business economic development program. That's it. Small business economic development program, with $3 million transferred from the rural one to that one. And it does that leave the rural one without any funds, or was there a strategic reason why that was done?
Mr. Chair, that's a very good question. In fact, as noted, in March of 2025, the SBED program, the Small Business Economic Development Program, had less than $300,000 in cash. And it had a pipeline of in excess of $1.5 million of loan applications. As noted, that the only way that the DCCD Division of Investments Director, Mr. McCauley, would be able to fund any of those is they'd have to suspend lending for approximately 6 months to allow the revolving fund related to SBED to recapitalize based upon payments. The board resolution in December, again, took $3 million from ADA's revolving fund to recapitalize SBED. The RDIF, as noted, is the lesser of the two, or least popular of the two programs. SBED in late 2025 had approximately $6 million in it. So we were taking three out of that $6 million from our RDIF to put into SBED for an aggregate recapitalization of up, and it's up to $3 million out of the RDIF, but for conversational purposes, we'll say $6 million in aggregate, half from ADA, half from the RDIF.
Great. Thank you very much for clarifying that. And if there's no further questions on the report, we have next, I think, impacts of the report on the economic and fiscal contributions of the Alaska Investment Industrial Development and Export Authority. It's dated January 2026, and it's the document that's in your binders.
Correct, or as we have referred to as the Northern Economics Report Executive Summary Brochure. It's the smaller 16-page document.
Yes. We do have copies.
Oh. Segueing or transitioning to that, Northern Economics and through legislation has concluded and written that ADA was built or constructed to do the hard things that private capital often avoids in Alaska, provide long-term patient risk-adjusted capital and infrastructure adjacent investments shaped by distance, logistics, seasonality, and small markets. The Alaskan legislature made a deliberate policy choice. The permanent fund would act and serve as the long-term wealth trust, and ADA would serve as the development finance shield that absorbs risks and protects the permanent fund from lending pressure. There are two important quotes in the executive brochure that, if you'll permit me, I'd like to read them. One, the first one is from Dave Rose, the first director of the Alaska Permanent Fund and ADA's first executive director. Mr. Rose put it plainly in his book, Saving for the Future. The Permanent Fund is a trust fund for the people of Alaska. ADA was established to help finance Alaska development projects, which are often very risky and sometimes fail completely. Mr. Rose, later on in his book, specifically Chapter 9, explained why ADA exists as a distinct institution rather than a function inside the permanent fund. I quote, "We could create a development bank out of, in parenthesis, ADA, rather than creating one using the permanent fund. ADA would become a shield absorbing the risk of the state of state lending and deflecting political pressure created by, and I quote, loan crazies. There's another important quote in the brochure. This is based upon an interview that Northern Economics had directly with Eric Wolford. Mr. Wolford explained that ADA's dividends further cushion the need for the state to tap the permanent fund to make up shortfalls in ADA's general fund, and that this makes ADA unique among U.S. development finance agencies or authorities. Simply put, in other words, ADA is not just a financing tool. It is an institution designated to generate statewide economic output and to convert a portion of that success into reoccurring general fund support through a statutorily defined dividend mechanism. The clear headline conclusion from this report is that using the implant model, which is widely used for this type of assessment, as the ADIS has contributed in excess of $60 billion in cumulative economic output from the period 1987 through to 2025 and 2022 dollars to the state of Alaska. Most of that is durable operations, approximately $28 billion through direct operations output and an additional $25 billion of indirect and induced operations. Construction has added about $3.5 or $4 billion, and then an additional $2 billion of direct and induced. It's important to note that ADA's value is not one-time construction stimulus. It's long-lived operating activity that sustains jobs and payroll year after year. As noted, how did Northern Economics reach the $60 billion conclusion? So Northern Economics defines economic output as direct plus indirect plus induced effects, and it used the implan input-out model of Alaska's economy to estimate those. IMPLAN is short for Impact Analysis and Planning. It is a regional input-output economic modeling system used to estimate how a change in spending or production ripples through economy. In this case, how ADA's investments, owned, financed projects have rippled and translated throughout the Alaskan economy. The study is transparent on its data limits. For example, Alaska employment wage data is considered confidential without firm authorization. Approximately 60% of the businesses contacted directly did provide data, which is supplemented by third-party research to verify where possible. I think in conclusion, and the concluding from Northern Economics is that ADA is a development tool that also generates recurring budgetary and fiscal support for Alaska and Alaskans. I'd like to conclude my remarks on Northern Economics, and I'm happy to entertain any additional questions or any questions that the committee may have at this point in time.
Yes, so we have, as a committee, been sort of waiting for this Northern Economics report, and we did get a copy of the 16-page, looks like 16 pages in total executive summary. When does ADA intend to have the rest of this document, and what was the holdup?
In my capacity, I had certainly provided extensive comments to Northern Economics. Those have been shared with ADA's executive director, as Mr. Raro, Randy Raro, ADA's executive director, has testified previously. It was the executive director's decision to review the documentation and the more comprehensive report, and that communication was I stalled for a suite of reasons, personal health reasons, not only from an ADA perspective, but also that from Northern Economics. We understand that it is a long time in coming, and we do anticipate, now that we've been able to release and have approval as staff to share the executive summary, the more comprehensive report will follow quite shortly thereafter.
What exactly does that mean as far as quite quickly?
Mr. Chair, as of January the 15th, we received direct communication from Northern Economics. It says they were waiting for some final inputs from ADA senior staff, and I expect that this will be available by the end of the month.
That's the end of January then?
That's correct, approximately a week's time.
Okay, thank you. We will ask for that again. Senator Bjorkman has a question.
Thank you, Senator Kawasaki. Thank you for putting this report on the record right now. I appreciate that, as well as the discussion of public funds used within ADA and ADA's production of other public funds in the course of a dividend. Of course, as we learned through the budgetary process last year, that dividend could be at a wide range of numbers, some of the reappropriation of that dividend was vetoed, and instead of ADA dollars being used to fund some state expenditures, money from the Higher Education Fund was used to fund state expenditures, money that would have gone to fund high school scholarships. Has ADA considered or contemplated the consequences of potential expansion of the usual and customary ADA dividend if the legislature is unwilling to reconstitute funds that were pulled from the higher ed fund last year and what that might mean for future years? Also, has ADA contemplated the claim that because technically, an interesting claim, again, related to statements made here about public funds, that public funds, although we now have established through the history of the fund as well as really the commingling of funds in and out of ADA with the dividend, are used to build a road like Ambler, that those funds not being quote-unquote public would somehow justify that Ambler Road not being able to be accessed by the general public?
Now, Senator Bjorkman, through the chair, if I may, I would certainly defer that this response to the question to ADA's general counsel. And if we do not have an immediate response, I would kindly request that we will take this back and speak with our executive director and senior staff and respond accordingly.
Senator Bjorkman, through the chair, I'm happy to jump in there and answer your last question first, and that is there a connection between public funds being used and the fact that the Ambler Road is intended to be a private industrial access road? There's no legal connection between those two. Just because public funds are used to construct a road does not mean that the road has to be public. And that's a long established, that was the way the Dalton was built. Dalton was built with public funds and yet, or with some public funds, pardon me, and yet the Dalton was initially private and has been private, many portions of it for a long time. And Alaska has made clear that a road can be constructed using public funds and yet can still be regulated as being a private road.
Well,
and the second part of the question?
And I'm sorry, the other part of the question, if you could remind me, I'm sorry, Senator.
Right. Last year, the legislature identified funds through the expansion of the ADA dividend to be a fund source for part of our budget that we passed last year. The governor vetoed those funds, and instead funds from the Higher Education Fund were used. If the legislature is not successful in recapitalizing the Higher Education Fund, is there any concern or has ADA contemplated that there will be more of an appetite to take money from ADA in expanding their dividend in the future?
I'm sorry, Senator, working through the chair, I don't have an answer to that. I can certainly look into it and try to get back to you, but I don't have an answer for you on that right now.
I think that should be something that we all might contemplate. Also, although I appreciate the statement and the position and the precedent that public dollars can be used to make roads that the public would then not have access to, I strongly and vociferously disagree with that practice. I think that that is not the way that we should be doing business in Alaska. Certainly, that road is not going to be denied access to locals, as I doubt that there would be enforcement in that area of the state to actually make that happen. I think that if we're going to build roads in this state, that they be open to everybody and that we all have equal access and opportunity to certainly public ground on those roads. And if private parties don't want to grant access through their private land, that's up to them. However, we have standards as we know about what it is we expect for development and moving across the country. And Thomas Jefferson, when he thought of the public land survey system, came up with a very unique idea to put section line easements across the landscape. And although it would be pretty hard to navigate section line easements in a straight line in many parts of Alaska, I think that concept of allowing access to and through land across the landscape is one that I think is pretty important. So just wanted to say that, but thanks.
My pleasure.
Thank you. Are there any further questions for any of the presenters today? Okay. Well, I just wanted to say that I appreciate you being able to be here in lieu of Mr. Raro, who's probably still tied up with the other House State Affairs Committee meeting. But once again, wanted to thank Jeff Johns, the Chief Investment Officer with ADA, General Counsel Kent Sullivan, and Jeffrey San Juan, who's working specifically on the Ambler Road project. We wanted to thank you for your time. Thank you for the presentation. And we look forward to seeing the rest of the report from Northern Economics within the month. So thank you very much. Is there any other business to come before committee? Hearing none, we will be adjourning this meeting. I will let you know now that there will not likely be a meeting on Thursday, January 29th, but we'll cancel officially tomorrow morning during floor. Without any further ado, the meeting is adjourned. Let the record reflect, time is 4:48.